Okay, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Vice.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. All right, it's 9 a.m. on November 7th, 2025. Welcome to the third day of the November meeting of the California Coastal Commission. I'd like to start this morning by with a roll call. Vanessa?
Commissioner O'Malley.
Present.
Commissioner O'Malley.
Present.
Commissioner Eckerly.
Here.
Commissioner Escalante.
Here.
Commissioner Jackson.
Here.
Commissioner Rodoni.
Present.
Commissioner Nadoff.
Here.
Commissioner Preciado. Commissioner Williams.
Here.
Commissioner Wilson.
Presente.
Vice Chair Hart.
Present.
You have a quorum.
Great, thanks so much. We'll now move to the virtual meeting procedures. Chris?
All right, good morning. This Coastal Commission meeting is occurring both in person and through Zoom. This meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at cal-span.org. If you have internet access and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak on an item, we recommend use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so in person, through the Zoom platform, or by phone. The speaker request forms may be found on the commission's webpage. Paper forms and a scannable QR code for paperless submittal are available on the commission staff table just outside the meeting room. For those on Zoom, we have posted virtual hearing procedures on the commission's agenda webpage, which is a guide on providing comments via Zoom or by phone. Members of the public speaking during general public comment may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during the general public comment period will not be accepted after 9 a.m. on each day of the meeting. In order to provide the opportunity for the broadest range of public participation, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comment are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. We will accept a request to speak on a regular agenda item up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have internet access, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 562-477-9089. Again, that number is 562-477-9089. Staff will provide you with the telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. When it is your time to address the commission, the organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone or provide instructions on how to unmute the phone. Madam Vice Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures.
Great, thank you so much. I want to also acknowledge that Commissioners Preciado and Commissioner Lopez have both joined the meeting. Also, just to clarify, our chair, Commissioner Harmon, is not here this morning, so I'll be chairing the meeting. All right, can we go to agenda changes, Mr. Carl?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Item 3 is the agenda changes. The posted agenda changes memo online is all accurate. All told, there's 5 agenda changes for today, and I'll run through them quickly. Item number 8A, this is the City of Trinidad's LCP amendment that's updating housing provisions. That item is moved to consent. Item 11A, this is the City of Pacifica's post-LCP certification map update. That item is moved to consent. Item 13A, this is the Pillar Point Harbor District CDP application for boat launch improvements. That item is moved to consent. Item 15B, this is Santa Cruz County's LCP amendment that does a series of LUP and code cleanups. That's also moved to consent. And item 16A, this is UC Santa Cruz's notice of impending development for their Younger Lagoon Beach Access Management Plan. That item is moved to consent. And that concludes the agenda changes for today.
All right, great. Thanks so much. We'll now open the hearing for general public comment. And would you let us know how many people you have?
Yes, today we have 12 people signed up for general public comment.
All right, so everyone will receive 2 minutes, and we'll start with the folks in the room. I did let Mr. Ray know he could have an additional minute as he's been here consistently for 3 full days. So do you want to begin with Mr. Ray? Or?
I'm going to go through the procedures first, and then we'll start with those in the room.
Okay, perfect.
Mr. Ray indicated he wanted to go last, or last of those people in person. For members of the public, I'll be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and invite you to speak when it is your turn. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes during general public comment at the discretion of the chair. In order to allow for live video testimony on Zoom, we will be bringing you in as panelists. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload, and this may take a moment. To speed up this process, we will bring several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you'll be moved back to attendee mode. For members of the public present in the room, I'll call your names in the order that they appear on a sign-up list. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium and introduce yourself when you approach to speak. There is a raise your hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you are using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see a button on your Zoom screen. If you have signed up to speak for this item and are able to do so, please raise your hand now. When it is your time to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on a phone by dialing *6. So we have 3 in person. We'll start with Henry Lala, Evan Sussman, and then Steve Ray. So Henry Lala.
How are you? Both Evan Sussman and I are here to testify for the same item. It's Evan speaking. Would that be okay?
Is it an item that's on the agenda?
It is not on the agenda, no.
Oh, sure. That's fine.
Okay,
but you could each have 2 minutes?
No, it's just Sussman speaking.
Oh, that's fine. Sure.
Good morning, Madam Vice Chair Hart and Coastal Commissioners. My name is Evan Sussman. I serve as the first president pro tempore of the Associated Student Senate at UC Santa Barbara. I'm joined by Henry Lala, our internal vice president, and we're here today on behalf of the student body to share our common concerns about the safety at the UCSB Lagoon and ask that the commission consider environmentally safe lighting solutions to the university. Over the past several years, there have been repeated incidences of sexual assault, robbery, and attempted kidnapping in and around the lagoon area, a zone classified as Environmentally Sensitive Habitat Area, or ESHA. As students, we deeply respect the lagoon's ecological importance and the protections afforded by the Coastal Commission, but we also believe that public safety and environmental preservation must coexist. We speak to you today not just because of one recent assault, but because of years of leaving students in the dark. With close partnership with and support of UC Police Department and senior administration at UCSB, we're reviewing data that shows a consistent pattern of danger near the lagoon. Dozens of calls related to sexual assault, rape, molestation, and transient crime have been reported over the past 20 years. The area's intentional overgrowth, while ecologically valuable, has created blind spots and enables crime and fear on a college campus. We're not asking for broad infrastructure changes. We're advocating for small-scale, downward-facing, animal-safe lighting, solutions that protect wildlife and while keeping students safe at the same time. That's why we've come up to Sacramento today, so that when UCSB requests such changes to the lagoon, you'll have had the chance to hear from students being most directly affected. Last but not least, we want to invite the Coastal Commission staff and chair to come to our beloved campus to further this important partnership with our students. Thank you for your time and your continued commitment to a California that is both safe and sustainable for all. Thank you.
Thank you. And then did Henry Lala also, do you also wish to speak? Or?
That's
okay.
All.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much for your testimony and for coming up here.
All right, Steve Ray. And then our first 3 speakers on Zoom will be Christina Aranguren, Jim Rurka, and then Jim Palmer.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair, and commissioners, staff, members of the public. Yesterday, Chair Harmon honored me by thanking me for my service in recognition of upcoming Veterans Day and Marine Corps birthday. I was very honored to receive that recognition. I was kind of embarrassed to be singled out, and I got a lot of questions. So to put all the questions to rest, yes, I served. I was an officer in the U.S. Marine Corps and Special Forces Unit Force Recon, Vietnam, and I'm reminded daily of my service. So that answers all the questions I got. But I want to point back to everybody else, because I accepted that honor in recognition of all of the other veterans who are connected with all of this work out here. So I want to honor the veterans on the commission, on the staff, all the members of the public who come here to protect the environment and save the coast. I want you to know that if I can speak for the commission here, that we wish everybody a happy Veterans Day and thank them all for their service. But I also want to turn it around on the commission here and thank the commission for your service, because what you do is invaluable to the state, to our environment, and to our world. The work of the Coast Commission is critically important to saving our coast and protecting our environment. Just as in the military, when our job was to protect our residents of the United States, protect our country, and to save our democracy, you're doing the same for the coast. And by protecting the environment, saving the coast, Dr. Hart, Peter Douglas, the late, great Peter Douglas, who was the author of the Coastal Act and was a long time, for decades, executive director of this commission, was famous for saying that the coast is never saved. It's always being saved. And it takes that kind of work and diligence to make sure that we eventually get closer to the ultimate goal of saving the coast by doing it every single day. And this commission does that work every single day. So I want to recognize you and all the work you do, and all of the coastal advocates and citizens like me, concerned citizens who come here and make the case. The work that they do is so invaluable to the work that you get to do. So on behalf of all of us out here, thank you for your service to the rest of us. Thank you.
Thank you. If I just could have 1 second before we go to Zoom. I just want to thank you, Steve, for everything that you do. Over all the years I've been on the commission, you're just a constant, and I know all the work you did on Banning Ranch. So I just want to, in the same way, express our gratitude in addition to your service to the country, your service to protecting the coast. So I really appreciate you. You're heroic as far as I'm concerned in all of your efforts. So thank you so much for everything.
Well, thank you. That covers the last 43 years, I presume.
That's it. That'll be the last time we speak of this. No, just kidding. No, really. Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate thank it. You.
All right. If we go to Zoom now. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Next, we have Christina Aranguren, Jim Rucka, Jim Palmer, and then Valerie Mishkin. Christina Aranguren.
Thank you. Prior to starting my time, can you confirm that my PowerPoint slide is up? It was submitted yesterday to materials.
What was the name under?
The email address would have been cmbayaki@gmail.com.
Okay, we're bringing
there
it up.
That's it. Thank you very much. Good morning, commissioners and staff. My name is Christina Aranguren. I am president of the Institute for Conservation, Advocacy, Research, and Education. We'd like to bring your attention to the growing popularity of mobile wood-burning saunas on public beaches. This was recently brought to our attention when private and commercial saunas began appearing at Big River Estuary and Mendocino Headland State Park, a state marine conservation area, marine protected area, and the ancestral territory of the Northern Coast Pomo. Recently, a special event permit for commercial sauna use was approved by state parks. And while we wait definitive word on the details of a rather confusing and permitting and approval process, it appears the agency has reconsidered its decision and has, at least for the time being, curtailed sauna activity. They've since directed anyone witnessing it to their dispatch, but the public cannot be expected to monitor and enforce. This is the job of state parks. They are the stewards. While we applaud the decision, our concern is that this activity will be pushed to another beach or sensitive coastal area and all the problems associated with it. Visual and air quality degradation, other environmental impacts warranting CEQA review, resource compatibility, visitor experience, public access, social equity, and compliance with zoning and coastal act regs. We urge that the commission fast-track discussion on sauna activity and develop policy for the coastal zone. Commissioner Hart, given your background, we would certainly appreciate your special attention to this issue. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Next, Jim Rurka, Jim Palmer, Valerie Mishkin. Jim Rurka? You should be able to turn your video on now. There you go.
Thank you. Madam Vice Chair, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Jim Rurka. I am the immediate past president of the Point Lobos Foundation and a current proud member of the Park It Steering Committee. I'm here today to ask for your support of the Park It project to provide safe visitor access to Point Lobos State Natural Reserve. This project is currently in the county permitting stage. Park It is a coalition of local residents, state parks leaders, transportation planners, and nonprofit organizations that have worked together now for years to find a solution to the increasingly dangerous and unsustainable access challenges at Point Lobos. What we have today is not safe access. It's too often hazardous. The parking lots regularly fill by mid-morning, even earlier on weekends and holidays, forcing hundreds of cars onto the shoulder of Highway 1. The result is a makeshift parking zone with no rules, no sidewalk, no barriers, no signage, and no truly safe route to the entrance. Every day, visitors, now pedestrians, must walk inches from Highway 1 traffic. Children, seniors, families, sometimes with strollers. The solution to this problem is the Park It Project, a comprehensive community-informed plan that includes a timed entry reservation system to Point Lobos and a shuttle service that will connect visitors safely direct to the coast from a nearby off-site location. Please support the Park It plan to provide guaranteed safe access, an enhanced visitor experience, and better protection of the fragile ecosystem that we have all been entrusted to care for. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. Next, Jim Palmer, Valerie Mishkin, Diana Sandoval. Jim Palmer?
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. I have 1 minute followed by a 1 minute video titled Palmer General Comments, Newport Beach Moorings.
All right. We got it.
Great. Thank you for all you do, and thank you for this opportunity. I'm asking this commission to require a CDP to address the Tidelands administration issues in Newport Beach and require mediation for resolution. Unlike previous city administrations, current leadership has failed to resolve issues in a meaningful collaboration among stakeholders. Last July 9, last year, the city discarded decades of collaborations and imposed a phased conversion of mooring permits to mooring licenses. This change from relatively affordable triple net mooring permits to build-to-suit type mooring licenses is a material change to harbor access that should go through the CDC process, followed by mediation to resolve. The State Lands Commission draft report is also concerning. While the city's granted broad latitude over tidelands management, the report accepts discriminatory treatment of tideland users when justified. The deeming of apples-to-apples comparisons of permits to permits for the berthing of boats in Newport Beach is now invalid because it's now apples-to-oranges, comparison permits to licenses, and somehow this justifies illogical discrimination. Please require a CDP for the city ordinance to change mooring permits to mooring licenses and require mediation to bring resolution. If you could play the video, I'd appreciate it.
The report's findings also include that the city can reasonably rely on its recent mooring appraisal to set rates for its mooring permits, and that there are clear differences in rate revisions for moorings and residential piers, which may violate the grant statutes and the California Constitution.
And I think what's really appalling in this situation is that incredible discrepancy between the pier rates and the mooring rates. And I can also acknowledge, or I acknowledge that the amount of tidelands that are being utilized by those private recreation or residential piers and the vessels that are attached to those piers is significantly larger than the moorings and the boats associated with those moorings. So there is some real definite inequity going on here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Valerie Mishkin, followed by Diana Sandoval, and then Lila Reynero. Valerie Mishkin.
Good morning. I'm Valerie Mishkin. I'm with Smart Coast California. Smart Coast California is a nonprofit organization providing planning advocacy and information to our coastal communities. Our mission is to foster a healthy and balanced dialogue of smart land use planning along our coast. We focus on education, collaboration, and sharing resources for effective decision making. We want to include all voices at the table and develop solutions that work statewide, creating smart solutions to sea level rise with neighborhood scale adaptations. Last month, it was September, we had the opportunity to present a dynamic policy summit program where California Coastal Commission Executive Director Dr. Kate Hucklebridge, Kelsey Ducklow, and Brittany Cozzolino brought forward updates to sea level rise adaptation planning. We thank you for participating in our summit and collaborating with us throughout the year. We were fortunate to have Dr. Hucklebridge share her reflections on the future of our coastline and introduce her team to discuss updates related to sea level rise adaptation planning. Executive staff included discussion of a recently initiated NOAA project of special merit to better assess beach resilience at a local scale. Our summit dove into legal issues as well as coastal community LCP amendments, movement and outcomes, private property rights, public trust, sustainability, and environmental needs and solutions. We appreciate the efforts being made to address climate change and sea level rise with a hybrid approach, and we look forward to working with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next is Diana Sandoval, followed by Lila Reynero and Noah Suarez-Sykes. Diana Sandoval.
Hi, is my presentation up?
Yes, we're bringing it up. Just give us a second. Okay.
Good morning, commissioners. I am Diana Sandoval, a property owner in Santa Barbara County Coastal Zone. I'm here because a new unpermitted hazardous gas line was unlawfully installed on my property in Anesha and Creek to serve an unpermitted structure at 3215 Foothill Road. As you're aware by now from the illegal bridge construction and the unrecorded public trail, Santa Barbara County has a history of unlawfully exempting this 22-acre property owner, reported to be from a billionaire family, from local and state laws and regulations, including the Coastal Act. Slide, please. On this slide, the photo on the left shows a new unsupported gas line crossing the Esha and Creek with no emergency shutoff valves. The photo on the right is a close-up confirming it's a new gas line. Slide, please. As we will see in the video, Santa Barbara County staff confirmed that a new gas line was indeed installed. Can you please press play on the video on the left? There should be a video. Okay, well, I'll play in the next. Oh, there we go. If we can go ahead and play that.
I wanted to get, like, the color is what I'm trying to get.
Yeah.
Not video. Let's go. Yeah, the color. Ready? Yeah. Okay.
So you confirm it's a new line, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a new gas.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to see. See the color between the two? Yeah. If this one was old, it'd be kind of the same color.
Yeah, that would fade out to that.
Yeah.
As we heard in the video, that's a new gas line, and that's Santa Barbara County inspectors for you. So, commissioners and enforcement staff, please do not allow Santa Barbara County and this property owner to backdoor channel yet another unlawful exemption, like the illegal bridge in the Esha, which remains unpermitted, and to date, or the unrecorded and blocked public trail. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Lila Reynero, Noah Suarez-Sykes, and Samuel Casillas. Lila Reynero.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Greetings, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. I'm Lila Renero, a concerned citizen residing in the coastal zone of Pedro Point in Pacifica and a founding member of Pacifica Homes Are Not Hotels. I provided comments at last month's CCC meeting regarding the revised short-term rental ordinance for Pacifica, which has been put in effect in the non-coastal areas and hopefully will be coming to you all soon for approval in the city's coastal zone. I'm speaking again today because my family and our friends and neighbors are continuing to live amongst the chaos created by living next to STRs and want to have peace restored to our community. Our family moved to Pacifica in 2012 because we loved the neighborhood and its family-friendly vibe. We used to enjoy a neighborly relationship with the family who lived across the street and up the hill from us, the kind of relationship where we could borrow cups of sugar from one another and their teenage kids would babysit our younger children. Our world got turned upside down when that house was sold in 2019 to new owners of a corporation that turned the property into a full-time unhosted STR. I'd like to set the record straight and address a comment made by a pro-SDR host who said that neighbors who are anti-SDR are lying and making up false stories in order to push our so-called agenda. This is false. I can assure you that we have genuinely had to deal with many issues and nuisances, including loud noise, cigarette and marijuana smoke, illegal parking blocking access for emergency responders, eyesores of overflowing garbage and property neglect, entitled guests throwing debris towards our house, lack of privacy, etc. The owners of this STR even hired a lawyer who sent us letters threatening legal action for having called the police for help with enforcement of these issues. Nobody wants to have to call the police, yet we've needed to do so dozens of times over the past 6 years, along with many other agencies, including code enforcement, building inspector, Department of Public Works, etc. I'll also mention that these are not low-cost accessible accommodations. There have been times when these listings have gone rented out for over $1,000 a night, and they are in no way ADA compliant. We are thrilled for our fellow Pacificans living in homes east of Highway 1. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next is Noah Suarez-Sykes and then Samuel Casillas. Noah Suarez-Sykes.
Great. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Tremendous. All right, let's go. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Noah Suarez-Sykes, and I'm an organizer at Better Neighbors LA, a coalition of hosts, tenants, housing activists, and community members. We conduct data analysis and research on the short-term rental industry throughout the coastal zone and its impact on affordable coastal access and housing. We believe true home sharing and hosted-only short-term rentals is the best way to balance housing accessibility and affordable access to the coast for visitors. So I'd like to speak on general public comment regarding developments in STR regulations in Pacifica, hi Lila, and how the regulations developed there could serve as a model for STR regulations throughout the California coast. Over the last 10 years, as you heard, Pacifica saw a drastic growth of short-term rentals, primarily driven by luxury short-term rentals oriented towards wealthy tourists. Between May 2017 and March 2023, the number of unhosted STRs more than doubled from 67 to 173. And the cost of the average unhosted STR in Pacifica's coastal zone lay between roughly $235 and $435 a night, which is much higher than the average price of a comparable hotel room in one of Pacifica's seven hotels at $193 per night. The expansion of STRs into the community resulted in significant damage to the fabric of the town. Corporate entities began buying up swaths of housing, causing significant problems for neighbors, as you heard, and hollowing out neighborhoods. Some Pacifica citizens were left as the only full-time residents on their streets, surrounded on all sides by STRs. The city of Pacifica engaged in a lengthy process of community input and reporting, which resulted in a powerful set of regulations that provide a model for the rest of the California coast, balancing the needs of visitors to the coast with the need to protect housing for long-term residents. The ordinance combines a variety of features from previous commission-approved STR regulations, a cap on unhosted stays and registration, similar to Half Moon Bay's, a requirement that STRs be limited to one per natural person, a ban on ADUs as STRs, and a private right of action that reduces the burden of enforcement on the city, among other provisions. This ordinance takes a common sense approach to regulating STRs that allows the operation of STRs while regulating them to protect the vibrant coastal community of Pacifica. When the Coastal Commission reviews this regulation, we ask that you approve it without amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Samuel Casillas, please accept being promoted to panelists. Thank you. And go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I have a couple subjects too. I didn't know it was critical for the first one here, but As a community planning and development chair for the Pedro Community Association, it is very disappointing the Coastal Commission staff is recommending the continued decimation of Pacifica's visitor-serving commercial space that continues to put Pacifica in a budget deficit and reduce the ability of the underserved communities to access affordable businesses in the coastal zone. At 1300 Dan Mann, there was an appeal.
Excuse me, Vice Chair Hart. This item is going to be reported in the DD's report today. So if he wants to comment, he needs to sign up for that particular item.
Okay.
This is already going to be on today? Okay. Sorry, then I'm going to...
Deputy Director's reports, you could look on the agenda, and then please move your testimony to that item. Thank you.
So I have a general public statement as well, then.
Okay, you still have a minute and a half.
Okay, how does that work?
Just go ahead, sir.
Okay. On August 11th, the City of Pacifica signed a new STR ordinance that had been pushed by the citizens of Pacifica because our city manager refused to do so. The ordinance came into effect in the coastal and the non-coastal region on September 11th. Most of it followed the model of Half Moon Bay with a maximum of 60 days for unhosted STRs. It is ridiculous and insulting that people of Pacifica have to put up with unmanaged hotels with unlawful behavior for so long. Less than a handful of STRs are actually hosted. Homes shares. Many are dedicated full-time rental properties. So here we are sitting here with all these STRs, and yet we have no ability to convert them into what you guys keep calling badly needed homes. We have been in the dark as to when the city manager, Kevin Woodhouse, plans to go before the Coastal Commission for a hearing date for the new ordinance. At this point, it seems like he is throwing a tantrum because he did not want this ordinance to pass, and he is slow rolling it for the Coastal Commission hearing. If you guys are serious about badly needed housing, here are at least 200 units that you can put back into the housing stock for families. The importance of passing this ordinance in the coastal zone is to return our community to all of Pacifica's neighborhoods and bring in new families and to stop the rampant overpriced hotel commercialization of our residential neighborhoods. Because of these STRs in Pacifica, our community has experienced population decline and the loss of families and children in our school system. We ask the Coastal Commission to push for the approval of this ordinance as quickly as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no more speakers for general public comment.
Okay, thank you so much, Chris, and thank you so much to everyone that's here in the room and that called in on Zoom to testify before the commission. We really appreciate it. All right, at this time, we're going to go to item 5, the consent calendar.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hart. There's nothing on there's nothing on item 5 consent calendar. There is an item 6, the items that have been moved to consent. As I described earlier, we have 5 items that we moved to the consent calendar. I'll quickly identify those so we're clear which ones those are. One second here. That was item 8A. This is the City of Trinidad's LCP amendment that's updating housing provisions. Item 11A, this is the City of Pacifica post-LCP certification map update. Item 13A, this is the Pillar Point Harbor District CDP application for boat launch improvements. Item 15B, this is the Santa Cruz County LCP amendment for LUP and code cleanups. And item 16A, this is the UC Santa Cruz Notice of Impending Development for their Younger Lagoon Beach Access Management Plan. I'd note that we did receive 2 comments raising some objections to item 15B, the Santa Cruz County LCP cleanup amendment, so I'd just like to note and respond to those. First, the Sierra Club suggests additional modifications to LCP coastal hazards provisions, but we don't think that those changes are necessary or appropriate in the context of this amendment, and we do note that the county is in the midst of a coastal hazards update where the provisions in question are likely to be modified. This is all covered more fully in the addendum that we distributed yesterday. And a second commenter takes exception to the certification of this amendment because they claim that a prior LCP amendment certified recently by the commission was improper, thus undermining the analysis of this amendment, and that the mods here violate SB 478 floor area ratio provisions. Neither of these allegations are accurate in our view. This is actually a fairly straightforward cleanup amendment where the mods that we've identified are intended to ensure internal LCP consistency and county staff is in agreement with them. So again, these objections and our responses to them are also covered in the addendum that was distributed yesterday.
No other correspondence was received for any of the other consent calendar items. Thus, in each case, for the items that have been moved to consent, the applicants are in agreement with the staff recommendations. We've described the known objections and comments on these items. We've made changes via addendum or explained why they don't change the staff recommendations where applicable. And we continue to recommend that the commission approve these five items through the consent calendar.
Thanks, Mr. Carl. All right. Does anyone have an ex parte on any of these items that have been removed? The consent calendar. All right. Seeing none, are there members of the public that have signed up to speak on this? Any of these?
Yes, we have a couple speakers. For item 11A, Caitlin Snodgrass from the City of Pacifica.
Okay. 2 minutes.
Caitlin, go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Chair Parman and Commission. My name is Caitlin Snodgrass, and I'm an associate planner with the City of Pacifica. On behalf of the city, I would like to express support for Pacifica's post-LCP certification map update, and I would like to thank Coastal staff for their close coordination with the city over the past few months on this matter. We look forward to continuing our collaboration with the Coastal Commission as we move forward with the implementation of our newly certified LCP. Thank you.
Thank you. And then now for item 15B, we have one speaker, Mike Guth, or Guth. Go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, Vice Chair Hart and Commissioners. I'm here to, representing the Sierra Club. As you know, I'm co-chair of Sierra Club California's Coastal Subcommittee. I'm also chair of Santa Cruz Group. So this Santa Cruz LCP is right in my neighborhood. I wanted to make clear that we do support the staff recommendations, although we've asked for an additional item. With regard to the key one that they've captured, they're clearing up an internal inconsistency with regard to site area determinations. And as Deputy Director Carl may remember, we hashed this out in Santa Cruz County over 20 years ago. When you have eroding bluffs and you have subdivided lots that stick out into the ocean 40 feet because the coast has receded since 1918 when they were subdivided, it's not appropriate to any longer continue that the underwater portions of the lot and the edges of the bluffs as part of the lot for density determinations and floor area ratio calculations. So I applaud that your staff has caught an internal inconsistency on the update, and we support that fully. However, we wanted to take this opportunity to get another change in. If you see our letter, we have an LUP policy that talks about siting, where you have to site new development rearward of a 100-year erosion line, regardless of whether or not there's a existing or proposed shoreline structure. The top level LUP says only a proposed structure. Your staff puts in writing at every hearing that that's to be interpreted as existing or proposed. We champion that for the public and in support of Coastal staff at all the hearings. We'd like to have, for internal consistency, that two-word addition, existing or, added to the LUP at this point with the cleanup, and we think it's a reasonable request given the work we do on behalf of that interpretation, and we ask that you add that in, please. Thank you for your attention.
All right, thank you. And then for items 13A and 16A, we have a few on Zoom available for questions, and there are no other speakers.
Thank you. Mr. Carl, did you want to respond to the public? To the comment on the item.
I would just note we always appreciate Mr. Goose's input, and we agree with his sentiment about the particular policy. As we indicated in the addendum, this commission and staff have interpreted that particular provision as applying to all armoring. So we don't think that there's going to be any sort of problem with it being in this interim period between when it's currently in place and there's going to be an LCP update for coastal hazards. We don't think that there's a problem that necessitates it being corrected right now. And this particular LCP amendment doesn't actually touch any of the coastal hazards provisions, so we thought it was appropriate to let it go for now, and then we'll look at that again when we get to the coastal hazard update.
Great. It's good to know that'll be coming before us. Does anyone want to remove an item that's on the consent calendar? All right. In that case, and I also wanted to apologize, I didn't ask if any commissioners had comments on the public comment portion, but I didn't see anyone. All right. So in that case, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar in a second and request
Move
a
consent.
Roll call vote. All right. Motion by Commissioner Wilson, second by Commissioner Escalante. And Vanessa, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Radoni?
Aye.
Radoni, yes. Commissioner Lopez?
Aye.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Nodoff?
Aye.
Nodoff, yes. Commissioner Preciado?
Yes.
Preciado, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Vice Chair Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Okay, thanks so much. Just wait 1 second. I want to make sure I maintain the quorum here. Am I good? Okay. All right. So now we'll move on to the North Coast DDR.
Good morning, Vice Chair Hart and Commissioners. I will be covering the North Coast items today. Item 7 is the Deputy Director's Report for the North Coast District, which includes one waiver and one certification review for Humboldt County. With regard to the certification review, Humboldt County acknowledged and accepted the Commission's suggested modifications for its sign ordinance LCP amendment, approved in July of this year. This was the amendment that involved new regulations for all sign types in different zones and related standards to protect coastal resources. We have reviewed the county's action and determined that it meets the requirements for certification. Staff is not aware of any opposition to these items, and we are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any items in this report.
Thanks, Ms. Kramer. Are there any speakers?
There are no speakers.
All right. Do three or more commissioners object to any item on the Deputy Director's report? Seeing none, the commission concurs, and that will bring us to item 9, I believe.
Yes, item 9A is a permit application from Resource Environmental Solutions, which will be presented by Peter Allen, the Commission's Statewide Transportation Program Manager, and staff ecologist Tom Wadsworth, both of whom are in the room. So I'll turn it over to them.
Good morning, Commissioners. Nice to be back. Item 9A, as you just heard, is an application by Resource Environmental Solutions, or RES, for a Mendocino Coast Mitigation Bank. The purpose of this project is to restore coastal habitats on two parcels with the goal of providing advanced mitigation credits for projects in Mendocino County, primarily for Caltrans. And here you can see one of the parcels with the Garcia River flowing through it. There are actually two items, actions before you today. One is to approve a CDP for the actual development at hand for the habitat restoration activities, and the second is to approve the commission signing on to a bank enabling instrument, or a BEI, that will enable the use of the mitigation credits in the future. In the first part of this presentation, I will describe the actual development before you, and in the second half, we will provide some additional background on advanced mitigation and the BEI. Lastly, please know that an addendum was published on Wednesday that both replaces Exhibit 5 and responds to some comments received. Next slide, please. There are two sites where the restoration activities are proposed, both of which are located in southern Mendocino County near Manchester and Point Arena. The two sites are known as the Garcia River Parcel and the Crispin Parcel. Next slide, please. The Garcia Parcel is located east of Point Arena and is developed with a house and a barn and was historically used for grazing. The Garcia River borders the southern portion of the property. Here, RES would restore 117 acres outlined in red to be part of the bank. Next slide, please. The Crispin property is located east of Highway 1 in Manchester State Park. The proposed restoration and bank area outlined in red is 24 acres. The parcel is located along the upper terrace of Brush Creek, which borders the southern edge. And again, the lands are mostly undeveloped with that have been impacted by past grazing. Next slide, please. Here we're looking at the proposed restoration activities on the Garcia River parcel. And obviously this slide is quite confusing to look at and has a lot going on, but it conveys the point, I think, that there's a lot of restoration happening here. The restoration improvements include creating riverside channels and floodplain channels to improve hydrologic connectivity renaturalizing drainages affected by historic grazing and erosion, and expanding seasonal wetlands. Various enhancements to river channels will improve habitat and rearing areas for salmonoids and other native aquatic species. And the restoration effort will also restore various types of environmentally sensitive habitat areas, or ESHAs, improve habitat for native species such as the Point Arena mountain beaver, and manage invasive species. Next slide. And here you can see many of the same restoration activities at the Crispin parcel, whereas we'll again undertake recontouring, revegetation, and invasive species management with the aim of restoring riparian, mesic, and upland habitats on the coastal terrace along with their associated ecosystem functions. At both sites, conservation easements will be established to protect the restored areas and to limit future activities that could impact the ecological benefits of this restoration. Next slide, please. The primary application before you today seeks authorization to undertake the just described restoration activities. However, restoration of the two parcels is intended to create a Mendocino Coast Mitigation Bank, which will supply advanced mitigation credits for projects in Mendocino County, primarily for Caltrans. Thus, the application before you also requests authorizations for our executive director here to become a signatory to the bank. The commission has approved a few such bank authorizations before, though it's been quite a few years. However, advanced mitigation is a concept that we are more actively working on in our partnership with Caltrans and others to streamline and improve habitat mitigation for transportation projects. Finding appropriate sites for habitat restoration is especially difficult along California's coastline, especially when needed in tight timelines of project delivery and CDP applications. Advanced mitigation is a key concept to address those difficulties, while also potentially providing benefits for habitat restoration overall. To give you quickly a better understanding of advanced mitigation generally, I would like to turn the mic over to Tom Wadsworth, who's a new member of our ecology team, and he's also the lead on our various advanced mitigation efforts. So take it over, Tom.
Thank you, Peter. Next slide, please. Good morning, Vice Chair Hart and Commissioners. Advanced mitigation is a way to create mitigation options before projects cause unavoidable environmental impacts. Although it's generally preferable to quickly mitigate for impacts in the immediate vicinity of where impacts occur, this is not always possible. Advanced mitigation solutions can simplify the project review process because mitigation is already available to apply. Mitigation banks are one of the primary approaches to advanced mitigation. The basic idea is that bank sponsors acquire land and permits to restore habitat. When the bank is formally established, credits can be sold to serve as compensatory mitigation for environmental impacts. Although a primary benefit of advanced mitigation is streamlining the permitting process for the applicant and the commission, there are other benefits as well. Mitigation banks can provide large-scale habitat restoration areas with more ecological uplift than several smaller mitigation projects scattered across a region. Advanced mitigation also reduces the temporal gap between project impacts and habitat restoration. Banks can be valuable restoration investments because they are vetted by multiple agencies, which helps ensure successful and meaningful mitigation. Next slide, please. A key concept for mitigation banks is the defined service area. Bank credits can only be used for project impacts within the service area. For the Mendocino Coast Mitigation Bank, the map here shows the commission's service area, which includes the coastal zone and the southern part of Mendocino County. Next slide, please. Another key concept in mitigation banking is the anticipated credits, which will eventually be used for project mitigation. One credit is equivalent to 1 acre of habitat restoration, and this bank is anticipated to provide about 90 credits across several habitat types. Credit types here will include ESHAs, riparian and seasonal wetlands, and coastal waters. Credits to compensate for species impacts are not proposed for this bank. The map on the slide here shows some of the proposed credit types, in this case, wetland ESHAs for the Garcia parcel. I'll note that the commission was a signatory to a few other mitigation banks, but this will be the first bank to include ESHA credits. Next slide, please. For the proposed Mendocino Mitigation Bank, an interagency review team, or IRT, was formed in 2021 to help guide bank development. Commission staff have been involved since that time. The IRT worked with RES to develop a draft bank enabling instrument, or BEI, which is attached here as Appendix B. BEI details the bank establishment process and it includes plans for restoration, monitoring, and management, as well as the types of credits that are proposed. The second motion before you today asks you to authorize the executive director to sign onto the BEI once it's complete. The commission staff believes this BEI is substantially complete. However, the IRT process is not final. The final BEI will be delivered to signatory agencies, including the Coastal Commission, for review and signature once the IRT review is complete. This is expected in early 2026, although this could be delayed by the federal government shutdown or other factors. Once the BEI is signed and other requirements are met, credits can be begin to be released for potential sale by RES. Importantly, only the commission or a local government with a certified LCP may approve use of bank credits as mitigation for a project that impacts Coastal Act resources. Neither approval of the CDP today nor the executive director's signing of the BEI will require future commissions to accept these credits as mitigation, but it does enable that option. Thank you for listening to that overview, and I'll now pass the mic back to Peter to finish the presentation.
Thanks, Tom. We've been working hard to bring more of these banks to you as a good solution for our future work with Caltrans, but this is actually the first one we've been able to bring. I want to briefly mention another related effort. The Commission, Caltrans, and other agencies have also been partnering on a statewide advanced mitigation initiative, and Caltrans has developed an advanced mitigation program. Commission staff are participating in work groups and other efforts related to this program, which is scoping, reviewing, and funding potential advanced mitigation efforts for transportation projects across the state. Mendocino Bank before you today is not part of that formal program. However, it is hoped that the statewide advanced mitigation program will lead to future similar mitigation banks, and we also hope that the process here with this bank will provide a good example for those future banks also in the coastal zone. Next slide, please. Oops. Next slide, please. That was the Sammy. Okay, so again, the staff recommends approval of CDP number 12240890 pursuant to the staff recommendation, as well as the authorization for the executive director to become a signatory to the Mendocino Coast Mitigation Bank BEI. The motions can be found on page 5 of the staff report, and this concludes our presentation, and we're available for questions.
Great. Thank you so much. All right, so first, I'll ask if there are any ex partes on this. Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing. Is there an applicant available? Looks like there is in person.
Mm-hmm. Tina Rosa?
Ms. Rosalind? You could just turn it on and just state your name and let me ask how much time you need, and you might need to lift the mic up. There you go.
Thank you. My name is Tina Rosa. Thank you so much, Commissioners. I am with Resource Environmental Solutions, the bank sponsor for the Mendocino Coast Mitigation Bank. I've worked on this project for about 4 years. Probably 2 minutes. Maybe,
okay, perfect. Thank you.
I'm available for questions if you need more time. Additionally available, I think on the Zoom call, is Ashley Zavagno with WRA. She and her team have been involved in the design and the technical efforts on this project, so she's available for any questions from the commission for anything technical or design related. And then I believe also Amy Wynn with Wynn Biological should also be, I think, on the phone as well. She helped with the permitting process with the Coastal Commission, and so she's available for questions as well. So I just want to say on behalf of all of our team, we are really excited about these projects. We're very passionate about restoration, and we feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to conduct restoration on these two parcels in Mendocino County. We also want to thank the commission staff for putting together an excellent staff report, very detailed, and we fully support what's in the report, and we're available for any questions that you all have.
Great. Thanks so much. Do we have speakers on this item?
I'm just confirming that we have Amy and Ashley on Zoom. There are no other speakers for this item.
All right, great. I'll close the public hearing, come back to staff for any further comments, which I probably don't have.
No, none from us. We have no further questions.
Okay, bring it to the commission for any comments or for, I think there are a couple of motions on this item.
I think it's a very exciting project, and I'm happy to make a motion.
Sure.
I'll speak to the second when that's done.
Sure, so we'll have a motion by Commissioner Nadoff, second with a few comments by Commissioner Wilson.
Okay, I move that the commission approve coastal development permit application number 1-24-0890 pursuant to the staff recommendation and request a yes vote.
I'll second that. I just want to speak to, we have talked about doing these kinds of projects for, I think, decades, actually. So to see one get over the line, I'm just really proud of you guys. I hope we see more of this. Thank you to our staff and thank you to Caltrans for actually getting this done. Really appreciate it. I hope it sets a model for other jurisdictions. Thanks.
Thanks so much. And I just want to acknowledge you both, Mr. Allen, Mr. Wadsworth, for all your work on this, as well as you, Ms. Rose, and your company. I agree with Commissioner Wilson. It's really exciting to see these move forward. Dr. Hucklebridge?
Through the chair, just, and I know that Commissioner Williams also wants to speak, but real quick, just want to, you know, we get to this point at the hearing, and it's satisfying, and everybody's in agreement, but there was an incredible amount of work that went into this over a period of time, and as easy as it sounds now, this is not easy work, and I just want to acknowledge that, because, and again, we worked really hard to get here, everybody involved, commission, the Caltrans, to everybody. So, but it really, these aren't easy to do. They're complicated. It takes a lot of cooperation that's hard to get to sometimes. And I want to appreciate first and foremost our staff for going through the process. And it's actually been a much bigger team than you have before you today who's gone through that, including some folks that have moved on. And our senior ecologist, Lauren Garcia, was involved. So it's been a big team. And so just didn't want that to go without notice because these are challenging. They're good. They're important. I think we're still in support of it, but they're hard to do. So thank you for pushing through. Thanks to the support of Caltrans. I think that's pushing us too. And I think it's, again, if we can make these more doable, it will be better for all of us. It just takes some work. Thanks.
Thanks, Commissioner Williams.
Yeah, just a couple things to add here. And I think just to Kate's point, what makes this so complicated is it's not just Caltrans and the Coastal Commission working on these. We got other state and federal agencies that are also involved in these discussions to really, you know, get this right and ensure that, you know, that credits aren't going to apply differently between the different agencies, because that can be very complicated. And we've learned a lot through this process, and we have many, many other advanced mitigation projects that are moving forward throughout the state. This is the first one that is moving forward in the coastal zone, and we're looking forward to hopefully a couple others coming online in the future. And I think everyone else has already said everything, so I don't really need to add to that, but appreciate everybody's time and effort on pulling this all together. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Commissioner, and it's fantastic to see the continuing collaboration between Caltrans, the Commission, State Parks, and everyone else. It's such a complicated deal, and it's true what you said, Kate. We zipped through it, and it's years of work to get to this point. Anybody that knows these parks and the importance of those rivers, it's a big deal.
And just one other item, I guess I'll just say, is that, you know, and the point was made earlier as well, but going from like postage stamp size mitigation sites to these larger, more comprehensive efforts, just it's better for the outcomes for the environment and all the, you know, resources that are out there. So I think over the long term, this is just a better way to go when we're able to do that. And of course, you know, this isn't going to necessarily cover all mitigation requirements for all projects. There's, you know, this will, you know, cover, I think, some of the core areas that we need when we move forward and identify needs for different projects.
Thank you. All right, so we have a motion and a second. I ask for a roll call vote, please, on this first motion.
Commissioner Escalante.
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Rodoni.
Aye.
Rodoni, yes. Commissioner Lopez.
Aye.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Nadoff.
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Preciado.
Aye.
Preciado, no.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I think that was it. Yay. Do you want to repeat, Commissioner Preciado, your vote?
My vote is yes.
Okay, there we go.
Preciado, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Vice Chair Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you. All right. Now we have the motion.
I would note there are two motions for this particular item.
Yeah. Right. Yes,
we have another motion. I move that the Commission authorize the Executive Director to become a signatory to the Mendocino Coast Mitigation Bank as described in the staff report and included as Appendix B dated May 6, 2025, and request a yes vote.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second on the Mitigation Bank motion and asking for a roll call vote.
Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Rodoni.
Yes.
Rodoni, yes. Commissioner Lopez.
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Nadoff.
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Preciado.
Yes.
Preciado, yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley.
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Escalante.
Yeah.
Escalante, yes. Vice Chair Hart.
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Great. Thank you so much, and congratulations to everyone that is involved in this. It'll be great to see the restoration up there. Now we'll move on to the DDR for North Central Coast, item 10, after we switch everybody around.
Yes, I'm back. That brings us to item number 10. This is the North Central Coast District Director's Report. Today we're reporting two waivers, one coastal permit amendment, and two emergency permits. I'll note that we received an objection to the immaterial amendment that allows for a commercial portion of a previously approved mixed-use project to be converted to three additional residential units for a total of eight mostly smaller units at the site. This is in Pacifica. The comments object to the loss of the commercial space. However, as indicated in the amendment notice, staff doesn't believe that the change leads to any sort of significant coastal resource concerns and that the resultant project is LCP consistent. In addition, staff further believes that adding the additional units helps, if only a little bit, to address the housing issues in the city. So we continue to recommend that the commission concur on the amendment. Past that, we're not aware of any objections or controversy regarding the other matters. And so the question is whether three or more commissioners object to any of the items in the DD's report. And if not, the commission will concur.
Thanks, Mr. Carl. Do we still have the speaker on this?
Yes. Samuel right. Casillas. And when you're able to, please unmute and begin.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, it is very disappointing that the Coast Commission staff is recommending the continued decimation of Pacifica's visitor-serving commercial space that continues to put Pacifica in a budget deficit and reduces the ability of underserved communities to access affordable businesses in the coastal zone. The most egregious attempt to approve this amendment by staff is it completely violates Coastal Act Section 30222, which states use of private land suitable for visitor-serving commercial recreation designed to enhance public opportunities for coastal recreation shall have priority over private residential. This amendment is a direct violation of the coastal zone. And the original, also in the original staff report for 2021 for this appeal, it highlights a willingness of the staff highlights a willingness of the applicant to work with the community and dismiss an issue from an earlier appeal in that the Planning Commission CDP approval was appealed to the city. Prior to the City Council, the applicant submitted alternative project designs to address some of the applicant's concern, including a revised project that reduced the project scope from three to two stories and from six residential units to four residential units. This amendment is a case of both commission staff and the applicant moving the goalposts and breaching all confidence of past agreements with the public trust. Then in the first amendment from last year, staff stated that the remaining 2,300 ground floor square foot will continue to operate as commercial space. which would be interpreted as a condition of approval for the First Amendment. The immaterial statement from the executive director would imply that the First Amendment would have no impact on the viability of remaining commercial space and make the first approved amendment, then makes the first approved amendment a cynical statement. Yet, here we are a year later with staff recommending another approval to remove the majority of the commercial space for more above market rate apartments that will further impact the environmental justice directive that the commission only seems to pay lip service to, while its actions continue to do the exact opposite, while also furthering Pacifica's economy in a structural deficit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coral.
Just quickly, I would note that this is general commercial mixed use, not visitor-serving commercial mixed use in terms of the prioritization that the speaker spoke to. This site is also in a pretty residential area, and the project, meaning the project, the resultant project here is LCP consistent. They've just chosen to pursue a project that's more residential heavy than commercial heavy. So we just don't see a coastal resource concern here. And as I indicated earlier, it does provide some necessary housing. These are smaller housing units that are being provided. They're roughly 500, 600, and 800 square feet. So there's the potential for affordability by design. So that's, other than that, available as always for more questions.
Thank you. Do three or more commissioners object to an item on the district director's report? All right, seeing no objection, the commission concurs. We're now going to move on to item 12A, the appeal, the Sladen-McElroy appeal. I have to move people around, or are you ready to go?
No, we're good.
Okay.
That does bring us to 12A. We do have a PowerPoint for this item, and Leslie Velasquez, who is our analyst who is working on this, will be giving the staff presentation.
Before we go to that, thank you so much. Could we hear the ex partes, of which I have a couple as well?
Thank you.
Commissioner.
In the packet is an ex parte for me. Mark Buell sent me an email on Wednesday, October 29th at 10:53. And there was four attachments to that email, and they were all in the packet today.
Thank you. Other ex partes? All right, I have two ex partes, one with the attorney, Mr. Prowse, as well as Mr. Buell, which is on file and in detail. I also want to report another ex parte from 8:15 a.m. this morning, which included property owners Chloe Sladen, Kevin McElroy, and Representative Mark Massara. The basic discussion, which lasted approximately 15 minutes and was an in-person in the fabulous restaurant here at the Holiday Inn, was we discussed the bluff setbacks and their allegation, the discussion on whether they're adequate or not, discussion regarding the stormwater runoff, including the addition of a generator as part of the approval, the tree removal, whether that occurred or not. So those, and we also just had a general discussion about relationships in the neighborhood, and that is my ex parte. And I'll give that to put it on file. All right. So at this time, we'll open the staff report, please.
We do have a PowerPoint for this one. Oh, there you go. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Item 12A is an appeal of Marin County's approval of a coastal development permit to demolish an existing home and to construct a new home with an ADU and related development. Slide 1 shows you a rendering of the proposed project. Next slide, please. Slide 2 shows you the project's location, noted with a red star, in the unincorporated community of Bolinas in western Marin County, just up coast of Stinson Beach. As you can see, the site is not located along the bluffs of the open ocean, rather it is above the Bolinas Lagoon Inlet. Next slide, please. Slide 3 zooms in to provide a view of the project site, outlined in red. As you can see, the site is just inland of Altura Avenue, and the appellant's house is located on the opposite side of Altura Avenue, along the bluff edge near the lagoon inlet, which is also noted. The site is currently developed with an approximately 1,500 square foot single-family residence. Next slide, please. Slide 4 shows the county-approved site plan with the existing residence and driveway shown in red within the footprint of the proposed project, including the proposed new residence, ADU, and driveway shown in blue, where that includes the area of the old house as well. The applicant proposes demolishing nearly all of the existing residents and constructing a new approximately 2,800 square foot single family residence with a 540 square foot attached garage and a 700 square foot detached accessory dwelling unit. The project would also shift the driveway to the north and include stormwater management infrastructure, including three 2,500-gallon stormwater retention tanks, as well as other associated development. Next slide, please. The appellants contend that the county incorrectly identified the bluff top edge and bluff retreat rates by relying on outdated data, and that the proposed project does not meet LCP bluff setback requirements. The appellants also contend that the project will worsen existing erosion by substantially increasing impervious surfaces and redirecting runoff towards an arroyo north of the appellant's home, worsening erosion there. Further, the appellants contend that proposed stormwater management improvements will not sufficiently address increases in runoff from impervious surfaces. Finally, the appellants allege that the applicants removed four trees from their property without a CDP. They contend that this unpermitted development must be addressed before a CDP for new development be issued, and that the tree removal exacerbated existing issues of erosion. Next slide, please. In terms of the bluff top setback, it appears that average annual erosion rates, as determined by erosion over the past 60 years or so, are quite low, less than 3 inches per year. At that rate, the bluff setback of more than 60 feet adequately addresses LCP setback requirements and will sufficiently protect the project for its economic life. At the identified rate, even 100 years of erosion would still leave a roughly 40-foot bluff top setback for the home. In terms of runoff and drainage control, the project's stormwater management system should be able to adequately manage site runoff, even with an increase in impervious surfaces, by buffering peak flows and retaining stormwater runoff. The system includes perimeter drains around structures, a trench drain at the driveway, two catchment basins, three landscaped water retention areas, and three 2,500-gallon stormwater retention tanks, where collected runoff would be directed, held, and used for on-site irrigation purposes. These features should be sufficient to address any concerns of erosion caused by runoff. Related to the alleged unpermitted removal of trees, it appears clear from the photos provided by the appellants that vegetation was removed, but it is not clear that such removal required a CDP based on the information available. That is because not all vegetation removal requires CDPs under the LCP, and there is no conclusive evidence to suggest that the vegetation removal that may have occurred triggered any CDP requirements. And in any case, the county has not identified any CDP violation nor opened any code enforcement case related to vegetation removal at the site. Next slide, please. Thus, staff recommends that the Commission find no substantial issue and that the Commission decline to take jurisdiction over the CDP application. The motion to do so can be found on page 5 of the staff report. These issues are also fully addressed in more detail in the addendum that was distributed yesterday. That concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Velasquez. All right, at this time I'm going to open the public hearing. I'm going to allow both the appellant and the applicant 5 minutes per side, and we will hear from the appellant that I believe is on Zoom this morning.
Yes, I'm moving Peter Prowse in. Peter Prowse is the appellant's representative. Also with them on Zoom are Mark Buell, Lawrence A. Stevens, and Clark Stoner. Give us a moment as I move them all in.
Good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, very good. Good morning. I'm Peter Prowse. I am representing the appellant this morning. This is a substantial issue hearing. The burden is on the applicant and staff to demonstrate that there is no substantial issue and they have not met their burden. What's clear is that there are substantial disputes between, on the one side, our experts and the neighbors, whom you'll be hearing from today and who objected before the county. They will show that this bluff is dangerous and eroding rapidly, and that the applicant illegally removed four large trees that could have helped stabilize that bluff and mitigated future erosion. On the other hand, there are the applicant and staff who, in the face of this evidence, still don't think there's a problem. They think that there will be only 5 feet of erosion over the 100-year life of this structure. Our surveyor, Larry Stevens, has established that there has been 12 feet of erosion in just the last 6 years, an erosion problem that has now gotten its teeth into this part of the bluff It's pointed like an arrow right at this project and is only expected to worsen with sea level rise. At this rate, at this current rate, the house you are being asked to approve today will fall into the ocean within 30 years. Is that really what you want to do? The new house would be located just 62.4 feet from the current top of the bluff. This doesn't even comply with the county's required 66-foot setback or with the 115-foot setback that Coastal Commission staff thought was appropriate in their initial report because of the inherently hazardous location of this project. This substantial difference of opinion, conflicting evidence, and shifting staff opinions and rationales demonstrates that there is a substantial issue. Thank you for putting up the slides. You can see the property here, 66 Altura Avenue. It's at the mouth of the Bolinas Lagoon. The base of this bluff is subject to significant wave action. There's a failed revetment at the bottom. You can see the remnants of previous recent slides still visible right below the red arrow in the slide, which points to the approximate top of the bluff at that time. There are large trees still visible on the subject property. Next slide. Here, you can see from 2022, a substantial new recent slide. It's now eating its way into the roadway directly in front of the subject property. The trees are still there on the property. Next slide. Here, we've got the new top of the bluff. It's successfully eaten well into the roadway, and it's well on its way towards 66 Altura Avenue. This is 2024. You can see substantial tree removal on the subject property for which there are have been no permits. And you'll be hearing about the diameter of the trees that were removed from other speakers. Can you say with absolute confidence now that this bluff isn't going to continue to erode at this rate? That this erosion isn't going to accelerate with sea level rise? That those trees were removed legally? You can't. Your staff can't. I encourage you to not adopt the resolution finding no substantial issue so that this matter can be set for a de novo hearing. If my time is to be shared with Mr. Stevens and Mr. Stoner, I'd ask you to please first go to Mr. Stevens.
Larry Stevens, you're in on Zoom. You should be able to unmute. And then we also have your presentation.
Hello, this is Larry Stevens.
Hi, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Just okay, one second. Sure. So we'll go to 2 minutes for this speaker.
Can we put up the PDF that I had provided?
Yes, just a moment.
The first page.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if we could zoom in just a little bit more on that, that would be wonderful. Exhibit F depicts a 2010 LIDAR mapping project that was conducted by San Francisco State University and called the Golden Gate Project. And on here, if you zoom up to the, if you pan up to the top of that page, you'll see the top of bank that existed in 2010. In that particular area, you will see that 16 feet of where that top of bluff used to be to where the current top of bluff is. And I think that was probably in 2019 as well. Now, closer to the site, which is only approximately 20 feet away, where the current top of bluff meets the most close location to the proposed structure that's being proposed at 66 Altura. And we located that just 2 weeks ago, physically located it by a survey crew where the top of bluff was. And that is where we determined that it was 62.4 feet. If we go to, now, I have three different exhibits here. This exhibit shows that where the 2010 contours are. The subsequent two exhibits show where the 2019 contours existed, and then subsequently the LIDAR project that was conducted by Bear Flag Engineering, where we provided the control for, and where those contours are located. And on all of these, you can show significant movement of that top of bluff, 12 feet and then 3 feet from 2019 to 2010 to the top of bluff that existed.
Okay. Are those the two speakers for the applicant? I'm sorry, for the appellant?
There were four that wished to speak together, but that was the 5 minutes.
Okay. So let's go now to the applicant, and they'll have 5 minutes.
And we have the applicant and representative here in person, Mark Massara and Chloe Sladen.
There you go.
There.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, I'm Mark Massara, and I have the privilege of representing the applicant, Sladen and McElroy family. They say that pictures are worth 1,000 words, and I'll just commend the appellants for those photographs and remind the commission that the red arrow that was depicted is showing the appellant's property, which is located on the bluff face with no setback whatsoever. The applicant's property is actually well landward of where the arrow was, and the project itself will go seaward than the existing footprint of the house, and in fact, is, as staff has determined, good for the life of the project at the site. Appellants make 3 allegations, and we urge that you support your staff and find no substantial issues. All of these 3 allegations have been considered by the county, your staff, and your commission geologist, and have been found to be without merit over and over again now. Erosion is minimal, not catastrophic as alleged by appellants. The county's 67-foot setback is, to quote your geologist, sufficient and more than adequate. 67 feet is not only sufficient for the life of the structure, but also leaves applicant well landward of both the first public road and appellant's house. In fact, that house is on the bluff face with no setback whatsoever. As staff notes, not only are appellant's erosion rates suspect and ill-founded, but the consultant making the claims is a surveyor and not a qualified licensed engineer or geologist. Regarding the stormwater improvements, rather than causing erosion, these improvements will dramatically improve existing conditions, allowing applicants to capture, store, treat, and reuse water from 100-year storm events with backup, something neither appellants nor any opponents provide. And lastly, this allegation of removal of giant redwood trees has been repeatedly debunked by both the county and your staff, and again today in staff's addendum. Landscaping of non-native yard vegetation is not trees, it's not redwood, and it's not unpermitted. And appellant's so-called report is nothing more than pictures from outer space and speculation on the size and type of trees that were allegedly removed. And it really all is just mud at the wall. And again, we urge that you support your staff analysis. I'd like to introduce the property owner, Chloe Sladen.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Chloe Sladen, the applicant. I'm the mother of 3 awesome daughters who attend the local Bolinas Public School. My husband and I are full-time residents in Bolinas, and Bolinas is losing families every year to unaffordability. We've spent 5 years on this project. We've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to meet and exceed code requirements to protect the bluff and respect the LCP. I'm now an expert on it. We engaged our neighbors extensively with 15 meetings. The county addressed all 3 of the appellant's contentions, erosion, stormwater, and trees, and they found no merit. Your staff and the commissioner's geologist agree erosion is minimal, and our project greatly improves existing conditions. We thank the staff for their diligence. I am so impressed by the depth of work that is represented, and we urge you to support your staff. Thank you.
Okay. Does that complete the applicant's presentation?
Yes, we're available for questions.
Okay, you can reserve the additional minute if you'd like. All right, so let me ask, is there anyone from Marin County?
I don't believe so.
All right. How about others who oppose the application at the local level, who are qualified speakers?
Yes, we have one qualified speaker, Dana Taylor.
Okay.
And Dana, you're being moved in right now.
And we'll start with 2 minutes, see if that's sufficient.
And Dana, when you're ready, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hang on. Can you pull up the video I submitted and the picture of three trees, please?
Yes, we're pulling
That's not the one. There's an actual video of the SERP.
We'll pull up the video. Just give us a moment.
Sure, sure. Okay, so this was, I'm sorry, I'm out of... This video shows the ocean surf this past Wednesday, November 5th. It's hitting the toe of the bluff that is considered not lagoon facing. The ocean surf hits here very often, and the calculation of this lagoon facing, I'm not sure what that's about. Now, can you please move to the three photographs of the redwood trees? No.
There's also a second file. Give us a moment to... Yeah.
Sure, sure. And then there's some above aerials.
I think it's in the other file, and then there's a second picture.
There's two photos that show from above. It's in a different file, I believe.
These were all the photos that we received.
Well, that redwood tree, there's two photos with it. They all came in at the same time. And it's critical for my presentation.
There was only one image sent with that.
Peter, can you help me here?
If our staff doesn't have the photo, there'd be no way to bring it up.
Okay, I got a. I did receive confirmation from you that it was taken, so I'll do my best to describe. This redwood tree is right on the fence line of 66 Altura on the Miramonte side. It has been topped, and I walk my dog. I've gone up on their property. They had a tree, the very same size, redwood tree with two smaller ones behind. Over the weekend in mid-June, July of 2024, they cut those down and they ground the stump out. I saw them. This tree, the two photos that I sent in are showing from Google Earth, you know, when you tilt the picture, you can see the shadows that they created, the trees that are gone. And you can see this particular tree, the same foliage as the trees that were cut down right on the fence line between.
We could give her another 30 seconds, please, because of the time.
So I know for certain that the tree that I sent those photos and they were received because I got confirmation. Sorry that they're not here to show everybody because, and I don't know if you can give me some option for this. They show without a doubt that there were redwood trees there that were cut down. I suppose a simpler way would be to get the man who cut them down to tell you that they were cut down. This tree that you're looking at is 36 inches in diameter at my shoulder height. Okay, can I keep speaking?
I think you've used your time, but thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I would note that there are photos in the staff report that were presented by the appellant that show the trees.
Yeah, thank you. There are no other speakers.
Okay, no other speakers on this. All right. At this time, I guess I'll bring it back to staff then. Doesn't look like there's more comments from the...
I believe the applicant had a minute reserved.
Right, I'm not seeing... Did they want to speak anymore? I didn't see him leap up, so... You have to move fast around here, you know? It's like...
I'm sorry. Again, Mark Massara for the applicant. The tree allegations have been deliberated over and over again. During the summer and the county deliberations, that the very person that was just testifying was claiming there were two trees removed. Now it's four. I think we were just shown a picture of a tree on a different property. And the aerial photographs just show non-native vegetation removed. It's a galleon attempt to create a fire, but all there is here is just a whole lot of smoke. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Massar. I'll close the public hearing at this time and ask for back to staff if you have anything additional.
Yeah, just a couple of things. I mean, the key issue here in our view is the question about erosion and erosion rates and setbacks. And clearly you have some dueling experts between the appellants and the applicants. And in those kind of cases, you know, we tend to rely on our own internal experts who have vetted this and have, you know, indicated that the erosion rates aren't as high as have been estimated. There's a couple of reasons for that. The appellant's estimating an erosion rate that's 2 foot per year based on identifying 12 feet of erosion over 6 years. So there were some sort of significant events during that period of time. But as this commission's well aware, average annualized erosion rates are meant to be calculated over longer periods of time that can take in those discrete episodic events and just general erosion over that time period to identify a rate that's more representative of a longer term rate so that you can apply that for planning purposes. And a time period of 6 years is simply not the type of time frame that's used. The applicants used the time frame of 60 years, which was relied on also by the county. That erosion rate for this particular site was actually less than 3 inches per year, so quite low. And I would want to comment, there were comments by the appellants, this was addressed in our addendum, that staff indicated that a 114-foot setback would be required for this project. We did no such thing. What had happened was the county, even though there was this 3 inches per year erosion rate, site-specific data showing that for this site, the county wanted to be more conservative. They decided to rely on a 1.5-foot rate per year for their setback purposes. And that's basically six times the erosion rate that the site-specific analysis indicated. And that was based on some data that was regionalized, general data from the 1970s. And so that's how they arrived at their setback. But as we evaluated this, including with our technical experts, the data actually showed that it was a very low erosion rate. And so for our purposes, and again, when you have these dueling experts, we rely on our experts. And that's what we came to the conclusion of. And this house is plenty well set back for that sort of a in this particular case. And as Ms. Velasquez indicated earlier, even over 100 years, there would still be a 40-foot setback if it eroded at that rate. With that, we're available for any other questions you may have.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Carl. All right, I'll bring it back to the commission for any comments. Commissioner Redone.
Thank you, Chair, or Vice Chair. Just to note, this project is in my supervisor district in Bolinas. I've reviewed the substantial record both at the county and at the Coastal Commission. Compliments both staffs on the work they did. I visited the site last weekend, and I cannot find any substantial issue that arises at this point, and so I'll be supporting staff's recommendation. You know, it's common that we have disagreement among experts, and as staff said, we depend on our experts at that point, and I appreciate the work they did, but again, I cannot find any substantial issue with this application and would deny the appeal.
Thanks, Commissioner. Any other comments on this item? All right. I've had, as I mentioned, a couple ex partes here. I've thought about this a lot. I've talked to staff about it a lot. And I have to say that I concur with my fellow commissioner, Redoni. This house is well set back. We're including now one of the things that came up in my ex parte with the appellants was the lack of a required generator. And they noted that stormwater removal is especially important when the power goes off. So here we are including now in the addendum, which, by the way, was excellent and I thought addressed all of the issues that were raised by the appellant. A generator will be included, so that will address that issue. I think one of the main problems seems, or contention seems to be the location of the driveway, but in my mind, the movement of the driveway, and my understanding is going to be with better type material that will be semi-permeable, and it will be moved to a better location. To me, based on everything I've read, everything I've thought about, it just seems to me that this will be an improvement in the situation, which is what staff noted. So I have to agree with the finding of no substantial issue. And if there are any other comments or a motion, look for that, please. Yeah, Commissioner Lopez.
So I'm going to look to support Commissioner Redoni down there and just want to say I've been through a lot of issues like this, and I know how taxing they can be emotionally and how they can really impact a community's interconnectedness and relationships. And so as we move past this, I hope that this neighborhood finds a way to heal, because these things are very challenging and can change a community. But at the end of the day, we all love this place that we share on the California coast, and I hope that you guys can find a way to make those bridges again. And I know that I can feel the weight of this issue for those folks in the room, and so I look forward to supporting Supervisor Commissioner Redoni down there in seconding his motion.
Okay.
Chair, I have one.
Oh, we have another comment.
Which is just, it's just a note that in the technical review of erosion rates, we've had a challenge that we've been yesterday or maybe the day before where we were not conservative enough or too conservative in this case, not conservative enough. I just want to point out, like, we get challenged in that rate in both directions almost on a per meeting basis. So I just want to acknowledge that, you know, I think our staff really does a good job and I trust the work that they've done in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. And Commissioner Redoni, would you like to make the motion in that case?
I move that the commission determine that appeal number A-2-MAR-25-0040 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 30603 of the Coastal Act, and I recommend a yes vote.
I'll second that.
Thank you. We have a motion, Commissioner Redoni, a second by Commissioner Lopez, and asking for a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Redoni?
Aye.
Redoni, yes. Commissioner Lopez?
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Nadoff?
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Preciado?
Yes.
Preciado, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Vice Chair Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
All right. Thank you so much. That concludes that item. So we're going to take a short break now. It's 10:38. Why don't we come back at 10:50? Thank you. Okay, we're going to resume the hearing. I am doing so well. It's 10:51. Self-congratulating myself. All right. Okay, so that brings us to the Central Coast DDR, item 14, I believe.
Yes, that's correct, Vice Chair Hart. That brings us to item number 14, Central Coast District Director's Report. And today we're reporting two waivers, two coastal permit amendments, one extension and one emergency permit. We did receive an objection to one of the amendments for the Henke residence improvements in the Carmel Highlands area of Monterey County. The objection is from the Carmel Highlands Association, who claims they have an exclusive private easement across the path on the Henke property. And they claim that the applicant cannot legally offer to dedicate a public access easement in the same area and that there's no nexus to require it. The overall path in question leads from the public road to Yankee Point Beach, and the applicant's piece of the path is nearest the road. With respect to the nature of the association's interest in the path area, staff disagrees with their exclusivity arguments and believes that the applicant does indeed have the right to propose such a public access easement over the trail on their property. As to nexus contentions, the commission is not actually requiring the easement. Rather, the applicant is proposing it, including to resolve various issues associated with past violations on the site. As a result, there's no need for the nexus that the association suggests is lacking. All of this is covered in more detail in the addendum that was distributed yesterday, and we continue to believe that the immaterial amendment is appropriate here. Past that, we're not aware of any objections or controversy regarding the other matters, and so the question is whether three or more commissioners object to any of the items in the DD's report, and if not, then the commission will concur.
Thank you. Are there any speakers?
No speakers, just three available for questions.
All right, I'll bring it back to the commission and ask if three or more commissioners object to any items on the deputy director report. Seeing none, the commission concurs. We'll move on to what I believe is our final item, which is 15. No, sorry, it's not. It's 15A.
Yes, it's item number 15A. This is the City of Marina's coastal hazards update. And I'd like to ask Kevin Kahn, who's our district manager for the Central Coast region, to give our staff presentation.
Thank you. And there's a PowerPoint. Great. So good morning, Vice Chair Hart and commissioners. Item 15A. Is the City of Marina's Coastal Hazards LCP Amendment. Next slide. The City of Marina is a community of approximately 23,000 residents that spans some 10 square miles on the southern half of the Monterey Bay. As seen here on slide 2, the city is located on the northern edge of the urbanized portion of the Monterey Peninsula and just south of the mostly undeveloped dunes and agricultural lands that stretch some 6 miles all the way to Moss Landing. Next slide. Slide 3 zooms in on the city's shoreline, which is about a 3-mile stretch of coast that is generally sparsely developed and mostly undeveloped dune, other than a nearly half-mile node of visitor serving and state parks development along Reservation Road and Dunes Drive, roughly circled in red on the slide. As you can see here on the slide, most of the city's urban area is inland of Highway 1. The limited amount of shoreline development in an otherwise developed city is fairly unique in coastal California and something of which the city is understandably proud. Next slide. The commission originally certified the city's local coastal program, or LCP, in 1982, and its coastal hazard provisions have been essentially unchanged since that time. Given its irreplaceable shoreline environment and the threats to it from global climate change and sea level rise, the city embarked on a coastal hazards update in 2017 with 2 grants from the Commission's Local Assistance Grants Program. As part of these efforts, the city undertook an existing conditions and vulnerability assessment for its shoreline assets. Among the more pertinent findings, the assessment found the city currently has no shoreline armoring and is generally well suited to address current and future hazard risks through non-armoring solutions, which form the foundation of the city's proposed LCP amendment. Next slide. The proposed amendment would add a new coastal hazards and sea level rise chapter to the LCP's land use plan, or LUP, and a corresponding section to the implementation plan, or IP, the primary goals of which are to maintain the city's mostly undeveloped shoreline, to keep its beaches open and accessible to all, and to keep its shoreline free of armoring into the future. To implement these goals, the proposed amendment includes a suite of provisions that require new development to be sited, designed, and conditioned to avoid coastal hazards threats in a manner that does not require shoreline armoring, either now or in the future. The provisions also require technical studies and implementing measures, such as deed restrictions, real estate disclosures, and bonding and in-lieu fees to fund future relocation and cleanup efforts to accomplish stated policy requirements. For development currently present that may be at risk, the proposed LUP requires nature-based and green infrastructure approaches, dune restoration, beach nourishment, and retreat relocation. Perhaps most notably, neither new or existing development would be allowed armoring to abate any threat, as the proposed amendment would affirmatively ban all shoreline armoring in the city. Next slide. Overall, the proposed amendment provides a strong regulatory structure that implements many of the key coastal hazard provisions associated with the Coastal Act. In fact, it includes many of the best practices recommended by the Commission's Sea Level Rise Policy Guidance, and its supporting vulnerability assessment and adaptation planning work is consistent with and fulfills the requirements of Senate Bill 272 at this time. The proposed amendment requires new development to be set back from the shore to avoid hazard risks without needing armoring, and it includes recommended best practices such as identifying triggers for phased adaptation, committing the city to continuous study and future LCP updates as the best available science and on-the-ground conditions change over time, and requirements for notice and disclosure of hazard risks to permittees, including to ensure that they, and not the public, internalize any risks for coastal development, including as it may eventually extend to cleanup and hazards abatement. The amendment through such triggers and other techniques is proactive about avoiding these problems in the future, all with the goal of keeping the city's beaches open, clean, and available to the general public as a recreational public commons and important natural resource. At this broad level, the proposed amendment can be seen as a model of sorts of coastal hazard management best practices. Next slide. That said, and although staff can empathize with the intent, the proposal to outright ban all shoreline armoring does raise certain concerns. While the Coastal Act clearly and emphatically requires coastal resource protection and clearly disallows shoreline armoring as a general rule, it also includes Section 30235 that acts as an override to require armoring approval in three specific circumstances: for endangered pre-1977 structures, also known as existing structures, public beaches, and coastal dependent uses. The pre-1977 existing structure provision is perhaps the most well-known of these scenarios, and it allows for structures that predate the permitting requirements of the Coastal Act to be allowed shoreline armoring under certain circumstances because they weren't necessarily developed in a way that would preclude the need for armoring, as is and was required of development that postdated 1977. As to the other two, public beaches and coastal dependent uses are two of the highest priorities under the Coastal Act and are called out for special treatment with respect to armoring for this purpose, including because they are necessarily located at the ocean-shore interface. Put another way, these three circumstances are afforded special rights under the Coastal Act, and while it is true that LCPs can be more protective than the Act, they cannot be inconsistent with it. Thus, while honestly a bit counterintuitive, an outright ban on armoring, including for these three legislated special cases, cannot be found consistent with Section 30235. In response, the city argues that its proposal can be found Coastal Act consistent and offers three reasons why. First, banning armoring and keeping the city's beaches and dunes free from it is inherently more protective of coastal resources than allowing it. Second, the city argues that armoring within marina would never be found consistent with the 30235 tests, as there will always be viable alternatives to armoring. And third, and related to the first two arguments, the city states that the commission could choose to exercise its discretion and approve an armoring ban via conflict resolution, whereby the commission determines whether a proposal is, on balance, most protective of significant coastal resources when there are conflicting Coastal Act Chapter 3 requirements. However, and as explained in more detail in the staff report, staff respectfully disagrees with these assertions. An affirmative ban is simply not consistent with Section 30235 and would potentially preclude certain high-priority Coastal Act uses. In essence, 30235 is already an override over other Coastal Act provisions to ensure that certain uses are protected and permissible. There's thus no conflict between that section and other Coastal Act provisions because the legislature already resolved the conflict within the Coastal Act. And while it may be true that an armoring-free shoreline is generally more protective of coastal resources, that's immaterial as to what the law requires in this circumstance. As to the argument that there are no uses that could meet Section 30235 tests in the city's coastal zone, and thus an armoring ban simply recognizes that fact, staff respectfully disagrees and notes that this too is simply too speculative an argument to make. Whether or not something is consistent with 30235 is a fact-specific exercise that is undertaken at the time of CDP application. And the simple fact is there are some pre-1977 structures in the city's coastal zone, and new coastal-dependent uses and public beaches are afforded that analysis. As such, we simply cannot say today that no, under no circumstance will there ever be, can, will any, under no circumstance will ever occur that there, we simply cannot say today that no under no circumstance will a use ever meet 30235's test. I got to rewrite that. And instead, there must be a required analysis that walks through the analytic armoring at the time of application. Next slide. Thus, staff recommends that the language be modified to provide for armoring allowances consistent with Coastal Act Section 30235 tests. Suggested modifications are also included to clarify proposed definitions, to ensure that relocation of at-risk, non-resource-dependent development is not placed within sensitive dune environment, and to ensure that erosion triggers and other adaptation planning measures are incorporated into CDP conditions of approval. Staff has worked with the city on the suggested modification language, and while they still prefer to affirmatively ban all armoring in Marina as they have proposed, they indicate they are in agreement with the modification language and the staff rec. Next slide. So as proposed and modified, the city's coastal hazards amendment provides a strong regulatory framework to ensure the safety, resiliency, and protection of Marina's natural and built shoreline environment. Staff has worked in close partnership with the city over the years on this amendment and has had respectful and productive conversations about shared objectives as well as certain Coastal Act legal requirements. We want to reiterate that the Commission has a good partner in the city in advancing innovative coastal resource protections and appreciates the city's willingness to take on difficult but important coastal management endeavors. In conclusion, staff recommends the Commission approve the amendment if it is modified as identified, and the four motions necessary to do so are found on page 7 of the staff report, and this concludes staff's presentation.
Thanks, Mr. Kahn. Are there any ex partes? Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing and ask how many speakers there are.
We have two with the applicant and then three other speakers.
All right. So are those in the room?
Yes, we have Allison Hunter and Dave Reville.
All right. Ms. Hunter, how much time would you need?
I think about 10 minutes should do it.
Okay.
For our
staff. Both of you.
Yeah.
Okay, combined. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. While our presentation's being pulled up, thank you so much to staff. That was great. I feel like we don't really need to do a presentation now because you, that was awesome. But
if you
we
could
do,
restate your name
sorry.
Into the mic, please.
Allison Hunter, I'm the planning manager for the city of Marina. And I am going to try to. Oh, gosh. Okay. That one's too small. Okay. Thanks so much. We're super excited to be here. City of Marina, LCP amendment for coastal hazards and sea level rise. I'm speaking on behalf of the city, Dave Revel from Integral Consulting is our consultant, and he will also be kind of tag-teaming me here with this presentation. Next slide, please. Oh, gosh. Oh, it's too small. okay, just an introduction to the team, and thanks to Coastal Commission staff. It's hard. Okay. Marina's coastal... Thank you. Coastal Hazards and Sea Level Rise LCP amendment would not be possible without two grants from the Coastal Commission. We got started on this in 2017. Something called COVID happened. We had some delay, and then we got a second grant to kind of just continue on and try to finish up this work. And special thanks to Kevin and Katie Butler in the Santa Cruz office, and also our
really great grant administrators, Jasmine Hahn and Carrie Botha, who are tremendously patient with people like me who don't do this grant money stuff. So that was very helpful. The city's team consists of myself and, as I said, Dave Revel, our consultant. Also our consultants from EMC Planning Group, Polaris Kinnison Brown. She passed away during this process, sadly, but also Anastasia Aziz and Esme Wall, both from EMC. The former planning manager with the City of Marina, Christy Hopper, and then myself. Also, just really pointing out how important the City of Marina's Planning Commission, City Council, and the public have been in this process. The community is overwhelmingly supportive of trying to maintain the city's beaches and coastline as they are today. So we, you know, unanimous approvals from the council and planning commission on what you see before you. Next slide, please. So the project scope, you have this map, of course. This just kind of shows you the layout of the coastal zone and the city boundary. We hope to create new policies and implementation measures addressing climate change along Marina's 3+ mile coast, compliant with SB 272. These policies will apply to the city's entire coastal zone, but obviously these hazards policies specifically are focused really on the parcels susceptible to erosion. And we do have a just very small strip of the property subject to these policies. We have a very limited development in this area, so we're very fortunate. And before I forget, I do want to just point out that not only do we not have any shoreline protection at this point, but just to make it clear for the commission how important it is to realize that the existing development that is on our coast already is conditioned. Their coastal development permits are conditioned to not have shoreline protection in the future. So once certified and adopted by the City Council, if the commission approves some version of this, these policies and implementation measures will be embedded into our larger comprehensive LCP update that we're also undertaking right now under a separate grant. Next slide, please. We have a very unique history and setting. I've already touched on it a little bit, but we are an unarmored beach with high, almost, you know, 100-foot Flandre dunes system. A big portion of Marina is made up of former Fort Ord Army Base. And when the Army Base was closed and a large portion of that land was conveyed to the City of Marina, the city undertook efforts to make sure that future development stayed inland, primarily east of the highway there. In 2019, the City of Marina declared the last beach sand mine in the U.S. a public nuisance in conjunction with the Coastal Commission and worked to close the mine and turn it. It's eventually going to be turned over to a public trust entity, and we are downzoning that property. So the vast majority of this coastline is going to be open space zone or public facilities zone as we move forward with our comprehensive update. And then just talking about our couple of grants that we've already mentioned, but also want to point out that these policies that we're proposing are really lockstep with the commission's draft 2026-2030 draft strategic plan that you've just released for public comment. Our amendment that we're asking for will help the Coastal Commission achieve many of the goals, objectives, and actions. Okay. Next slide, please. Okay. This is the City Council's vision and goal that they adopted, and I won't read it because I'll get in trouble. There's our mayor, Bruce Delgado, just, you know, surveying our land there. But it's clear in the City Council's vision and goals that the number one priority is to protect these coastal spaces. Next slide, please. We have several justifications for why we think an exception to Public Resources Code 30235 should be provided to the city. Shoreline protective devices cause loss of beach. I don't think anyone is arguing that. So we want to protect our beach to the greatest extent feasible. And if we lose our beach, then we will have loss of coastal access for residents and visitors. And we know that that's a primary tenet of the Coastal Act. Next slide, please. This is just a slide showing all of our public engagement and hearings starting in 2017 and going up to City Council adoption in January of this year. Next slide. So our proposed policies will protect coastal resources and access for our diverse, historically underrepresented community in perpetuity. And we just want to acknowledge that we are emphasizing nature-based solutions and managed retreat. So we're not saying there will be no features, but that we're focusing on kind of the soft armoring. Next slide, please. Okay, handing it over to Dave.
Good morning, Commission. David Rebel with Integral Consulting on behalf of the City of Marina. The vulnerability assessment was done, started in 2017, looking at erosion being the biggest hazard that the city faces too. And it primarily would affect dune habitat. There are a few buildings at the Sanctuary Beach Resort and Marina State Beach parking lot and restroom and sewer pump station. With 2 feet of sea level rise, the entire parking lot could be at risk, potentially, as well as access roads to the resort and the Marina Coast Water District. And then by 5 feet, we could be looking at a much different environment with an erosion of about 150 acres of dune, 26 buildings at the Sanctuary Beach Resort and the Marina Coast Water District facility. Next slide, please. The social vulnerability assessment was also really interesting to dig in, and that the change from the Fort Ord residential community, provided more affordable housing and significant visitor serving development. Marina has the highest diversity in Monterey County, with a third of the population has low income. Beach access, free beach access and parking is thus critical. Of the 8 coastal accesses, only 10% are within a half mile of the coast. Sand mining, since it has ceased, may provide additional access, but we've tried to integrate all of these into these policies. Next slide, please. So our approach really is kind of a threefold. One, we really are interested in integrating the triggers in monitoring into codifying it in the LCP amendment so that we can phase adaptation and be transparent with applicants as they are next slide, please. You okay? Okay, thank you. Thank you. Do you need some water? I have a water glass right here. Okay. I felt bad for continuing to talk. So we really do want to prohibit coastal armoring. Since all of the development that has been approved after 1977 has had a condition of approval requiring no coastal armoring. We want to take this and codify this for perpetuity. Since 2017, every vote by the electeds have unanimously supported no coastal armoring. Next slide, please. Managed retreat is not an evacuation. The city has not said, no, bye, get out. It's saying that we are providing nature-based approaches and streamlining permitting for those so they can be implemented quickly in emergency situations. We are actively developing an opportunistic beach nourishment program and getting appropriate environmental review documents in place so that we can streamline these approaches when they're necessary. And we're working with the City of Monterey as part of a regional program in that manner. Next slide, please. So please, we implore you, let Marina lead the way. Let a local jurisdiction of a constituted of low-income, previously marginalized populations be more protective than the Coastal Commission. Please, most California cities hassle you again and again to let them have their authority over their jurisdiction. Marina is saying, we will take that and go farther. Please support the city without the amendments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, I seem to have recovered, so we can move forward. So do we have additional speakers on this item, Chris?
Yes, we have three speakers.
Okay.
We'll start with Mitch Silverstein, Mike Guth, and then Anna Christensen.
Each will have 2 minutes.
Sorry, did you call me first?
No, Mitch Silverstein first, then Mike Guth, and then Anna Christensen. Perfect. So Mitch Silverstein, go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, Chair Harmon and Commissioners, or Vice Chair Harmon, Commissioners. Mitch Silverstein, Surfrider Foundation. Preserving our beaches and public access to them is core to surfriders' work in California, where we stand to lose up to 70% of our beaches by 2100 due to sea level rise. Armoring the coast to protect existing development further sacrifices our beaches, exacerbating the existential threat that rising seas pose. LCP updates are key to ensuring local governments plan for sea level rise in a way that centers the preservation of coastal resources. Indeed, one of the stated objectives in the Commission's draft five-year strategic plan is to ensure LCPs address sea level rise and climate change. The City of Marina is in a fortunate position of having no shoreline armoring and few shoreline developments. The few shoreline developments that do exist have either agreed never to armor or aren't eligible for armoring under the Coastal Act. Furthermore, the city is incredibly forward-thinking and has chosen a path that few, if any, other coastal cities have taken. Whereas cities often ask you for special shoreline armoring carve-outs in their LCP updates, Marina understands the futility of trying to fight an encroaching ocean. Whereas some cities' efforts toward an LCP update have literally imploded over the mere mention of managed retreat, the City of Marina fully embraces the concept. They understand that attempting to hold the line only leads to loss of beaches and irreplaceable coastal habitat. Therefore, they've chosen to disallow armoring of their coast. Surfrider, and especially our Monterey County chapter, is 100% in support of Marina's approach and the LCP amendment they've submitted. As ironic as the whole situation is, we do understand the potential inconsistency with Coastal Act Section 3335. Honestly, I do think with a little more time, the amendment language could be further strengthened to make it functionally impossible to improve shoreline armoring without potential inconsistencies with the Coastal Act. However, my impression is that the city would rather not further delay approval, which I respect. Surfrider would like to thank the City of Marina and its leaders for their bold and exemplary approach to preparing for sea level rise. Our hope is that other cities follow their example, and we ask that the Commission holds this LCP coastal hazards provision as the gold standard for other local governments to aspire towards. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Guth.
Thank you. Good morning again, Vice Chair Hart and Commissioners. Mike Guth for the Sierra Club. We've got a letter in the record, and I am in the Santa Cruz group, which is in the Ventana chapter of Monterey Bay. So to start, we'd like to applaud the City of Marina for its bold approach and its LCP, which we fully support, and acknowledge their continuing leadership role in coastal management in the Monterey Bay area. The Sierra Club supports the City Marina submission without modification. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the arguments against that the staff has just presented. We just had a hearing on the mitigation bank habitat restoration, and I heard commissioners talk about it's been decades in the waiting and this is so great. And Director Hucklebridge chimed in. And here we've been waiting for the same kind of thing here. And instead, we're getting a recommendation for rejection. I mean, as a matter of policy, today, up is down and down is up. But the argument is made is not one of policy, but one of law. And there is a problem with what your staff has said. The staff has said, quote, has said that this, first of all, the city has analyzed through years of work that there's nothing at risk and nothing will be at risk that needs armoring. with all that work, staff says it's too speculative. You can't accept that argument because people are going to say that about every sea level rise plan that's trying to protect stuff because your staff, because you're going to, if you adopt that position. Plus, they say you have to do this stuff on a project by project basis. You can't do it blanket. That's in conflict with the whole going to the neighborhood based solutions thing that Dr. Lester presented to you last year. So I don't have enough time to go into it further, but it's a radical interpretation of law to say that you can't conflict resolve out and find their approach the most protective of coastal resources. We urge you to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Anna Christensen.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, good. Sierra Club California supports the approval of the City of Marina's LCP amendment as written without modifications. The LCP prohibits shoreline protection devices for hazards abatements for any development in order to protect city beaches in the long term. Coastal Commission staff interpret Section 30235 as an override that prohibits the City of Marina's LCP from being most protective of their coastal resources, further stating that they do not have the legal right to proactively ban shoreline protective devices without Coastal Commission approval. The Coastal Act not only created a body of laws, it established a system for enforcing them, including the qualifications for those serving as commissioners. The majority of you are elected officials representing cities or counties, each with their own priorities, problems, and measures being taken to address them. In the face of sea level rise, the City of Marina has terminated sand mining and written an LCP amendment that bans shoreline armoring in order to be most protective of its own coastal resources. Perhaps the jurisdiction that you represent may one day take a similar proactive approach to this or another issue. Does Section 30235 mandate that the Coastal Commission alone has the power to decide how, when, and where coastal resources are protected, or can local jurisdictions be permitted to do so within their own boundaries? The implications of and precedent set by allowing Section 30235 to act as an override of other Coastal Act provisions and also LCP coastal resources protections reveals an abuse of authority that is deeply undemocratic. As to what this has to do with the controversial Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project or other things, we cannot say for sure, but it doesn't. It's not good. It's not good to be the king. No kings. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no more speakers.
Okay, thanks so much. I don't feel a crown currently. Okay, thanks so much to all of our public speakers on this item. We'll bring it back to staff for response. Kevin?
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair. So just a few quick comments. So first, again, we'd very much like to thank the city for both their open dialogue with us throughout this amendment process. And these are several-year processes, a lot of complicated, complex issues. So it is a time-consuming endeavor, and we thank you for your willingness to tackle and propose some pretty innovative and protective policies. Also, as I noted in the staff report and presentation, there's a lot of good language in here, and so we don't want to forget that when we're talking about focusing on the armoring ban proposal, and we just want to make sure the city gets the recognition it deserves for getting us here today. With respect to armoring, and I know this does kind of put us in a somewhat awkward position, and staff certainly recognizes that and has had many internal discussions and debates about what to do with this thing. I think the best way to conceptualize the staff recommendation is to ensure that the three types of uses specified under the Coastal Act, coastal dependent uses, public beaches, and existing structures, are afforded the opportunity for analysis on whether armoring is appropriate or not. This isn't, put another way, we're not requiring or mandating that armoring be required. It's simply stating that for these three uses, there's going to be an analysis as to whether it can meet the 30235 tests. And as part of that future analysis, we still certainly may find that armoring is not appropriate and cannot meet those tests, including that there are alternatives. And so it's clear we think there probably will be, given the likelihood, and that the likelihood of any kind of large-scale armoring is quite low in this city. Again, given its geography, given its large lots, the ability to retreat, the ability to find alternative locations or alternative measures to abate any threat. But we at least need to provide that analysis rather than closing it off. With that, we're available for questions.
I guess I would just add, I think Kevin said it all. We appreciate the efforts from the city in pushing these policies forward and having us have this conversation. It's really valuable, and we really look forward to working with the city on finding all the alternatives to armoring and hopefully not needing to approve armoring the city. We look forward to that outcome, but here this is just a legal question of whether it's consistent with 30235. And in this case, we felt the need to add the modifications that we did. But again, appreciate this sort of unique dune ecosystem here and the ability to retreat in certain areas, and just really commend the city for their approach here. This is what we want coastal cities and communities to be thinking about. And they have been forward thinking, and we support them, and we will look forward to finding alternatives to armoring in the future. So I just want to make that very clear. This is what we want to see from folks, this sort of willingness to think about expansively about alternatives. And again, I think Marina's in a great position there are things that, you know, nature-based solutions and retreat and things that can be done here. And again, we look forward to supporting that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Director. All right. I'll bring it back to the commission for any comments. I'll have a comment, and then we'll go to a motion. Commissioner Wilson, and then Commissioner Nato.
Yeah, a couple of things. And what I'm really, I think what we understand is that it's just in the statute, right, that just basically, it's just plainly worded in the statute that we don't have the capacity, the ability to completely ban outright without some review. Now, that statute could be changed in the future, I suppose, and modified by the legislature to allow jurisdictions to make that request and allow us to grant them that ability to do so, and maybe that's something we might want to consider supporting. But in this moment, it appears that the statute doesn't allow that. And that we sort of have to take the, we don't have to necessarily, but I think we lean conservatively to take the interpretation of our attorneys and staff who work within the Coastal Act more than on a daily basis. So, unless anyone on the commission here wants to review that statute, and staff could bring it up and we could take a look at it, my view of it looks pretty clear. So, I'm willing to support the motion as we move forward and commend the city of Marina for really standing up and doing the right thing. And your photographs of your retreat process, awesome. Thank you. And I can't wait to have you guys speak to this at planning conferences as we move forward and all the other stuff, because I think you guys are really taking it to the next level and where we need to be. I think unfortunately the statute is a bit more conservative than that in the current context. So,
Commissioner Nata?
I was going to say I'm glad you put up that article from the LA Times, because I remember how Marina has been featured as a leader in nature-based solutions, and I really commend you for that. I'm scratching my head because are there some pre-1977 structures? Because there's hardly any structures on the coast. So is the sanctuary pre-1977?
No, that one is not. That was built in the 90s. As far as we understand, the Marina State Beach parking lot is existing structure pre-77. There's some infrastructure up at the CEMEX site that is pre-77. And then there's the former Marina Coast Water District wastewater treatment plant. So there's not many. There are some. And that's why, you know, I think as part of any analysis, we would certainly look at it and explore all available options not to armor, but we need to at least have the ability to have that evaluation.
Okay, so as I certainly, I'm with the city on this, but I'm hearing from the city that the city is agrees with the amendments. So I guess I will, support staff on this, but I'm sorry that we don't, I'd like to encourage local jurisdictions to do exactly what you're doing. And
Commissioner Lopez. I'm sorry, Commissioner, have you finished?
Yes.
Commissioner Lopez.
So first, a note of personal privilege, just want to thank you for including Polaris's name. I know Tavin's a dear friend, and so having her name up there just brought me back to her loss, but also her life and all that she imparted on our community, so thank you. And I too share the feelings of my fellow commissioners. I appreciate the city pushing as hard, and Commissioner Wilson talked about the photos that you included, and also that photo of Bruce. That was a great photo. So thank you for including that. All the work he does to put native plants back on those dunes to really restore the habitat, it's really part of his goal and life mission. And I see the work here as you're in front of us asking for this as part of that work that that entire body does together. And so I'll be supporting staff's recommendation, but look forward to opportunities in the future to push this envelope further. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Thank you for being here. Thank you, staff, for your hard work. As an old Army guy who spent a little time at Fort Ord, I love what you've done with the place. Because, I mean, quite frankly, I've always wondered. I said, man, whatever happened to Fort Ord? What's going on at Fort Ord? I wonder about that all the time, right? And we've got, you know, Monterey and San Francisco and all these old, unbelievably great locations. I mean, it's interesting. We tend to close the good locations and improve upon the not so good locations from a military perspective. But love what you're doing. Love the forward thinking. I mean, I think of this as the never say never is really what this is. We can never say never, even though the odds are slim to none. But appreciate the forward thinking. Appreciate the initiative. And there are many other cities that can learn from what you guys are doing. So thank you.
Thank you. I just have a question and a couple comments. So you just mentioned that the CMEX plant has some pre-77 armoring. Is that what you said, Kevin, or did I miss that?
Structures,
it's structured.
Right.
Okay. So could you just talk for a second about, is that going to be removed, and whether the proposed desal, is it in that same location? Would it be entitled to armoring? Could you just address that?
Well, with respect to CEMEX, I don't know if Ms. Hagee here wants to speak to that. That's under a commission order for most of it to be removed. With respect to CalAm, there is actually a no future armoring condition on its desalination infrastructure. That permit has a 25-year term, though, so it's not in perpetuity forever. One other thing with respect, we talked about existing structures. It's not just existing structures. It's also prospectively for new potential coastal dependent development as well. And I think the complicated factor is we can't predict everything in the future and what type of coastal dependent use might be appropriate and allowable here. And, you know, it could also be something as small as like a public coastal access way that for whatever reason needs to be located where it needs to be located. So again, it's just not foreclosing the opportunity, even though we agree with the sentiment.
Okay, thank you. And I also just want to join my fellow commissioners to appreciate the city of Marina. I've been so impressed over the time I've been on the commission, going back to the CalAm discussion and everything we learned about Marina, and now just it being reinforced. I so appreciate the diversity of your community, the inclusiveness, and this is just a wonderful proposal for your LCP amendment. All right. So at this time, I'm going to ask for, there are going to be four motions, I believe. Is it Commissioner Wilson? You're going to make the motion?
I'll take a shot, might as well.
Good-oke.
It's up in front of me, so let's do it. And again, this does not foreclose the City of Marina's ability to remove or relocate those infrastructures that are at risk that are under your control now. I mean, they're just, by all means, get them out of the way and make future armoring a moot subject. So I move that the Commission certify Land Use Plan Amendment LCP-3-MRA-25-006-1 as submitted by the City of Marina, and I recommend a no vote.
We have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Wilson, a second by Commissioner Lopez. We need a roll call vote, please.
Remember, it's a no, guys.
Commissioner Lopez.
No.
Lopez, no. Commissioner Nadoff.
No.
Nadoff, no. Commissioner Preciado.
Preciado, no.
Preciado, no. Commissioner Wilson.
No.
Wilson, no. Commissioner O'Malley.
No.
O'Malley, no. Commissioner Escalante.
No.
Escalante, no. Commissioner Jackson.
No.
Jackson, no. Commissioner Radoni.
No.
Radoni, no. Vice Chair Hart.
No.
Hart, no. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you. All right. Next motion.
I move that the Commission certify a Land Use Plan Amendment Number LCP-3-MRA-25-006-1 for the City of Marina if it is modified as suggested in the staff report, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
All right, motion second. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Nadoff?
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Preciado?
Yes.
Preciado, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Radoni.
Yes.
Radoni, yes. Commissioner Lopez.
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Vice Chair Hart.
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Okay. Commissioner Wilson.
All right. I move that the Commission reject the Implementation Plan Amendment LCP-3-MRA-25-006-1 as submitted by the City of Marina, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
All right, roll call, please.
Commissioner Preciado?
Yes.
Preciado, yes. Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yeah.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Radoni?
Yes.
Radoni, yes. Commissioner Lopez?
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Nadoff?
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Vice Chair Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
All right. Final motion.
I move that the Commission certify LCP Amendment Number LCP-3-MRA-25-006-1 as submitted by the City of Marina if it is modified as suggested in the staff report, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
All right. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Radoni?
Yes.
Radoni, yes. Commissioner Lopez?
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Nadoff?
Aye.
Nadoff, yes. Commissioner Preciado?
Yes.
Preciado, yes. Vice Chair Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
All right. Thank you very much. That concludes that item. I now want to return to Wednesday's statewide items. I think the only thing we need to take action on is the approval of the minutes. Those are the minutes from July. And I think that's it. Oh, is September on there? Oh, it is. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you, Vanessa. July and September.
I move approval of minutes from July and September 2025.
Second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. I believe we still need a roll call vote even on this. Yep, we do.
Commissioner O'Malley.
Yes.
O'Malley, yes. Commissioner Escalante.
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Jackson, yes. Commissioner Radoni.
Yes.
Radoni, yes. Commissioner Lopez.
Yes.
Lopez, yes. Commissioner Nodoff.
Aye.
Nodoff, yes. Commissioner Preciado.
Aye.
Preciado, yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Vice Chair Hart.
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Great. Are there any reports on the statewide items from the AG or any other reports? No? All right. In that case, that concludes the business part of the meeting today, and we'll go into closed session. Does anyone need a break, or can we just... Okay. We'll take a... Yeah, great. So 10 minutes, is that appropriate? 5 to 10 minutes, and we're going to stay in this room. All right, great. Welcome back to the hearing open session of the California Coastal Commission. We'd like a report out on closed session from our counsel, Louise Warren.
Thank you. The commission met in closed session and received litigation information and advice and took action on City of Trinidad versus... versus the Tri Ancestral Society et al. I will double check the name of that case. The City of Fort Bragg versus Mendocino Railway. Friends of Oceana Dunes versus California Department of Parks and Recreation et al. And Space Exploration Technologies, Inc. Versus Coastal Commission. It also received litigation information and advice on Sable Corporation versus Coastal Commission. And that concludes my report, with the exception that it's City of Trinidad versus Tri Ancestral Society. Happened to get it right. Thanks.
All right, great. Thanks so much. Sorry about that. All right, the meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everybody. See you next month in Imperial Beach.